the third case, Hegwood versus the City of Eau Claire. Mr. Olson.
May it please the court. In the district court, the plaintiffs advanced and lost on summary judgment a number of claims relating to their treatment by the Eau Claire Police Department and the revocation of their liquor license. This appeal is limited to the contention that the Wisconsin statute that permits the revocation of a liquor license if the licensee keeps or maintains a disorderly or riotous, improper, or indecent house is unconstitutionally vague. Municipal officials need to know with some clarity who is eligible for the extreme sanction of revocation and who is not.
You know, the city says you're not a good plaintiff for making an as-applied challenge to the statute, since under any reasonable interpretation of a disorderly house, the nasty habit has been one. Don't you think that reasonable people would agree that employees who are hiding underage drinkers in basements and getting into fights with patrons and over-serving would make for a disorderly house?
No, Your Honor. If you look at the constructions of disorderly house language from other states, you see situations where some constructions require that activities constituting a disorderly house have to disturb the neighborhood. Hiding people in basements doesn't qualify for that.
How about fights with patrons and over-serving? Would that disturb a neighborhood?
You also
keeping in mind I live on Rush Street, off of Rush Street.
a fight out in front of your tavern on the street might well disturb the neighborhood, but there are other cases, especially the Harris case, which gives the best construction, I think, of a workable definition of the term disorderly house, because it answers all of the questions the Wisconsin statute leaves unanswered, and that says part of the showing me that's required to show a disorderly house is that the owners know of the situation and are doing nothing to solve it. And in this case, the owners were doing a lot to solve the situation.
Well, isn't one of the problems by the facts of this case was that you had altercations involving the owner's employees, multiple altercations?
That's what the city says, mm-hmm. But if you read the facts, what you find is a situation in which these employees were either attacked by patrons or mm-hmm. they intervened in the fights between patrons. If you've got a fight between patrons going on, mm-hmm. you can choose not to intervene, and then right. the city of Eau Claire won't be able to say you had a bouncer involved in an altercation, but meanwhile, one of the patrons could be knocking the other one silly.
But it seems a fair reading of the facts in the record show not a defending of either patrons or the employees, but actual aggression on the part of some of these employees. You disagree with that?
There may be one or two instances like that, but there are others where the bouncers were simply trying to restrain unreasonable people or to get them out of the bar. In the one case, the guy was tased and arrested where he was holding down this unreasonable patron. Mm-hmm. In another case, a guy was cited, one of the instances they used, the patron was cited with several counts of disorderly conduct. So these are not situations, none of them are situations where the tavern staff made an unprovoked mm-hmm. assault on some member
Isn't
of the
Isn't the district court opinion reference an employee named Wagner who was actually kicking at a customer's face?
Well,
that's not defensive.
That was at the bottom of a pile mm-hmm. In an altercation in which the customer had attacked Wagner and others. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that.
Wasn't there another employee named Stebbins who was involved, in, by my count, at least two or three altercations before he was terminated?
He may have been, but again, the one, to the extent that there was a way to mm-hmm. fault Stebbins, he was terminated after that one. In mm-hmm. the earlier one, it appears that he was reasonably trying to intervene in a situation that required intervention. The Wisconsin statute doesn't really answer the question what sorts of conduct mm-hmm. qualify as a disorderly host. It doesn't answer the question.
Do you agree that all four words have to be read all together in conjunction?
I don't think the city has to show all four words because they're set forth in the disjunctive. Mm-hmm. I think the city can show a disorderly house or a riotous house. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way it's read, that doesn't help very much because none of those words mean very much.
Could I ask you this? Would you agree would you agree that the employees of the bar were sometimes engaged in conduct that reasonable people would agree amounts to what reasonable people believe is disorderly conduct?
Well, I would say you could make a case, maybe on one or two occasions, that an employee of the bar engaged in disorderly conduct in the street.
One or two.
That's what I would say.
One or two.
Does it matter what type of statute this is? That this is a statute regulating whether or not a bar continues to operate in the city versus a criminal statute?
It does, and all the case law says that criminal statutes have to be more precise. But, mm-hmm. man, if you're going to find a civil statute mm-hmm. that has a penalty that is so severe that it ought to be required to have the same exactitude as a mm-hmm. low-level criminal statute, this is it. If you revoke somebody's liquor license, mm-hmm. you're taking away millions of dollars of property mm-hmm. interest, perhaps, in a large operation. You're putting 50, 60 people mm-hmm. out of work in a large operation. That has to be taken at least as seriously as maybe a month in jail or mm-hmm. a $500 forfeiture or fine.
Does it matter that there's a hearing before all that happens?
It does matter, but the hearing doesn't help to solve mm-hmm. the vagueness of the statute, mm-hmm. And as the Squire case points out, mm-hmm. the people who are making the decision at the hearing are left with unfettered discretion mm-hmm. to decide that anything or everything is a disorderly house. I want to say a word about the district court's decision to try to construe this statute in a sensible way by using the elements from the Wisconsin Disorderly Conduct Statute, which are violent, abusive, indecent, profane, boisterous, unreasonably loud, or otherwise disorderly. You cannot engraft the second element from the Wisconsin Disorderly Conduct Statute, which is under circumstances in which the conduct tends to cause or provoke a disturbance, onto the disorderly house statute because the language isn't there. The Wisconsin courts needed that statutory language in order to use that element to find that the disorderly conduct statute wasn't vague. If you just take the list of terms by itself without that second element of the effect of the conduct, you're talking about a place where people engage in conduct that is abusive or indecent or profane, but a stand-up comic might be abusive or profane, and a gentleman's club that's got a license to present nude dancing and does so in a very orderly fashion that doesn't disturb anybody and is exercising its First Amendment rights might be thought by many to be indecent. So if you just adopt this list without the tending to provoke a disturbance element, you are getting into a situation where you have a reading of this statute that can inhibit the exercise of constitutional rights. Also, just adopting that list doesn't answer the frequency question. How often does this conduct have to occur for it to be a disorderly house? It's an easy question in the disorderly conduct statute, once. but that's a criminal statute designed to punish individual acts. And it doesn't answer the question about whether you have to show knowledge or culpability on the part of the owner of the establishment for the conduct of patrons or staff. That, again, is a question that doesn't arise under the disorderly conduct statute because you're punishing the person who engaged in the conduct. I would say that the Connolly case that we cite at the beginning of the argument section of our brief talks about what's a vague statute. And it says it's a statute where men of common intelligence have to guess at its meaning or can differ, will necessarily differ as to its application. If you look at the different constructions of the word disorderly house that are arrived at in the different states around the country, as we've discussed in our brief, it's proof that men of common intelligence differ as to the application of this language. That's a definition of vagueness, and I'd like to save the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Mr. Alberg?
Good morning. I'm Joel Aberg. I represent the City of Eau Claire and the other defendants, but I believe, given the position taken by the appellant, that the City of Eau Claire is the only remaining defendant at this point.
I'm confused about one thing right off the starting block. This is a claim under 42 U.S.C. Section 1983, claiming that a Wisconsin statute violates the federal constitution because it's too vague, right?
I believe so.
I think the answer is yes. But three pages of the brief discuss the Wisconsin Supreme Court's guidelines for evaluating whether a statute is vague or not. Why is that at all relevant here?
Well, in terms of an interpretation of the law, and I think both of the parties have tried to address that, in this situation, I thought it was appropriate for the court to see how the Wisconsin courts would look at this statute and how they would review it. In terms of review, in terms of, I guess the review in terms of statutory interpretation is whether there's some sort of ambiguity. And so in that context, that's the reason that I put those particular sites in.
I mean, I suppose Wisconsin law would be relevant to demonstrate how Wisconsin has demonstrated the statute in a non-vague way, but this isn't what the city is using the Wisconsin Supreme Court to demonstrate. You're using them to assert the standard for finding something unconstitutionally vague. So I really,
Well, that was the purpose, Judge, and that was the reason for including those particular issues. I'd like to start off with a quote from page 49 of the appellant's principal brief, which is Wisconsin law. But it indicates there, and the appellant has argued, that, quote, context is important to meaning. So, too, is the structure of the statute in which the operative language appears.
Well, neither of you should have been doing that, but go ahead if you must.
In that regard, in terms of looking at context, Judge, the statute at 120, Wisconsin Statute 125.01, describes the legislative intent of the Wisconsin legislature in passing this law as a regulation on a business which potentially, is, I think as the judges have all noted, have some concerns about underage drinking, violations of law, alcohol abuse, over-serving to the point of having drunk drivers be on the road. All things that are a concern, I think, with regard to the statute, but also indicating an economic regulation of the same.
Well, speaking of an economic regulation, Mr. Hegwood raises an interesting point. All this you know, although this might be a civil statute as opposed to a criminal statute, his business is on the line. And for all we know, he might prefer to pay a high criminal fine or maybe even spend 30 days in jail rather than lose his livelihood. The stakes here can be high, can't they? And wouldn't that indicate the need for more clarity in the statute?
Well, I suppose that you could make that argument with respect to any of the bars that you're talking about. And the thing that I can tell you is with regard to the licenses, it's not a license that's automatically renewed. You have to apply, and it's a year license, and you have to keep going through. And in terms of looking at how to resolve complaints, the state of Wisconsin has put into place a regulatory or administrative proceeding which really provides the due process that I think is suggested as somehow been lacking in terms of protecting that interest of that bar. I do note that in the facts of this particular case, a judicial review was sought of the revocation of the proceeding. That was a stipulated dismissal there so that they could sell the bar to another owner. At this point, I don't know whether they made money off that deal or not. Maybe in this particular instance, a revocation of a license forced them to sell at a time when the value of the bar was high, and maybe they ended up being better for them in the long run.
Would you agree that if this was a criminal statute, it would fail under a vagueness test?
No, I don't think so, because I think Judge Conley points out that the word disorderly, which is something that he looks at, mm-hmm. has already been approved in a criminal statute in the state of Wisconsin. So, no, I wouldn't agree with that. Mm-hmm. And I think
did Judge Conley also point out that a similar worded statute in the Squire case was struck down and it wasn't his distinction? He was good enough to find that case for mm-hmm. you all. That was a district court opinion that got affirmed by the Fourth Circuit, and the vagueness challenge was upheld. But he distinguished it by the fact that this wasn't a criminal statute.
Well, I think you have that. The other thing is I don't know that that's an alcohol license law, and you mm-hmm. have to look at the statutory scheme that's been put in place to the state for that's why I find it as being a problem with a lot of the cases that were cited from other jurisdictions, mm-hmm. is that they really don't apply in any way because they don't look at the statute that's put in place by the state. So from the legislative intent point of view, I think it's very clear that Wisconsin is taking very seriously the obligation it has to regulate this kind of a business for the public safety. And as the judges have noted, there have been numerous admitted violent acts which occurred, and the distinction with other bars, Eau Claire is a college town and has a street called Water Street that has a number of bars on it, and so there are issues or problems particularly for all bars, but the particular problem here was that you had bar employees brawling with patrons, and so now the people that you have hired to prevent violence are in there actually kind of fomenting the violence, and that's where the city thought that this was a kind of a different situation than some of the other bars. And I think that there isn't any disagreement with that from the appellants because they did not appeal the court's determination on the class of one equal protection claim. And Judge Conley made it clear that the equal protection claim had to do with the fact that the city felt that employees brawling with patrons was a different kind of animal mm-hmm. than perhaps the normal ones where people get drunk and they might push each other around. with respect to the statutory procedure, which is part of Section 125.12, that does, as I said, provide procedural protection for an alcohol license holder if a complaint is filed. Now, potentially there might not ever be a complaint filed, but in this particular case there was. And why is that the case? Because the city police force was called on numerous occasions to come and deal with these issues at this bar. And that's the reason why they talked ahead of time with Mr. Hegwood and discussed it with him, tried to work with him as to things they saw that were problems, and they, at least from the point of view of the police department, did not feel that progress was being made. A letter from the city attorney was sent to Mr. Hegwood indicating that thought that there was ongoing problems. And the response seemed to be, for the most part, from Mr. Hegwood was that he was a person who had experience in law enforcement, that he knew what was required to have personnel that are properly trained to deal with these types of issues, that he has personally trained these people or had them trained, and that they were doing the things that they were supposed to be doing, yet these things were happening.
But so, just sticking to the language, would you agree that the language can be read in a vague way? Would you agree with that?
The language of the statute?
Mm-hmm.
No, I would not.
Okay. What is improper?
Well, improper, I guess, would be...
Isn't that very subjective? What is proper to you might not be proper to me.
Well, the only thing I can say with regard to that is, in terms of how this is proceeding, mm-hmm. it was a disorderly house that mm-hmm. was looked at. And in terms of analysis as to what would be improper, I think you'd have to look into the context of the, and this is, again, going back to what we're talking about here, mm-hmm. is you have a statute that's very specifically addressed to bar license holders. So I think if you look at a common sense approach as to perhaps if you're talking about a normal citizen on the street and that's all you're referring to is improper, maybe it would be vague. But when you're talking about a license holder who has a license subject to the regulation that mm-hmm. which are inside of the statute, it becomes more and more clear. And
do you think we have to look at the entire clause? Because the entire clause reads, the person keeps or maintains a disorderly or riotous, indecent, or improper house. But if you try and break those down and you just look at improper, don't you think that's problematic?
No. And the reason I said, Judge, mm-hmm. is because of the context within the what's being regulated.
Okay.
And that's what gives it the definition, mm-hmm. in my view. So that's why I don't agree that that would be the case. Now, if you were applying this, as I said, to somebody off the street, and they might be walking down the street mm-hmm. and be arrested for improperly walking or something like that, maybe that would be an issue mm-hmm. that's a problem.
Well, how could a barkeeper know how to maintain a proper house? What is proper? And we get back to that. Is it having dirty napkins on top of the bar? Is that improper?
Well, it could be if you're looking at the sanitary codes mm-hmm. at all restaurants and places where alcohol is served. I'm sure there are a host of regulations that they have to apply to, and perhaps that would be applied to mm-hmm. the term improper. And if they did not run the, if they did not maintain the building to a certain building code, that could be improper. I mean, it all kind of depends on what you're talking about. The reason we're talking about disorderly here is because of the nature of the acts that brought us to this place mm-hmm. to begin with, which is the fighting. And so that's, and as I said before, what is particularly important or was important to the city at the time is you had employees brawling with the patrons. Let's see. With respect to 125.12, which is the statute which talks about the proceedings and the protections, procedural due process protections, which are provided to license holders, there is initially a summons to show cause along with the complaint. There is then an evidentiary hearing which is held to review the allegations made in the complaint to determine whether they're true or not or have a factual basis. There is a recommendation or a decision on suspension or revocation based on good cause. And then there is the opportunity for judicial review. So this is the process that is required by the state of Wisconsin for the city, which is the issuing authority of the license in this particular case, and would be the obligation of any municipality, any local authority that was issuing an alcohol license to serve alcohol. The concerns, I think I've gone through most of these. The other thing that I'd like to kind of conclude with is it seems to me that the meaning of disorderly in the context of what we're talking about here is very plain. And I don't really see the argument that you can somehow parse this out to a point where what actually happened isn't disorderly. And if you look at the term house, I mean, that's not really ambiguous. When you're talking about the fact of an alcohol license is being issued to somebody who runs a tavern somewhere. So I think it's logical, within the context of the statute, that's what that is referring to, is the tavern itself, the place where alcohol is served. And if you have brawls in this place where you're serving alcohol, to such an extent that you have police coming on a fairly routine basis to break up these altercations, that's a problem, right? And that's disorderly. And the meaning of the statute in that particular instance is plain. With that, we would ask that the circuit court affirm the district court ruling for a summary judgment dismissing the case and finding that the Wisconsin statute at issue is constitutional in a federal sense.
Thank you, Salver.
Thank you.
The administrative committee that voted to revoke this license came down 3-2 in favor of revocation. It was as close as it could be. Let's say,
what was the vote on offering temporary suspension? Do we have that?
I don't know that that's a matter of record. If it is, I don't know the answer.
Okay.
If you read this statute to require that there has to be some sort of disturbance, then you take out the hiding in the basement instances and the over-serving one patron instance, and you're down to 5 instances instead of 8 over 3 years. If you think that maybe some of these committee members would have come out on a majority that there was no culpability on the part of the establishment in another 1 or 2, very conservatively, 1 or 2 of these instances, then you're down to 3 or 4 instances over the course of 3 years, 2003 through 2006. That raises a real question of, is this statute precise enough in terms of prescribing the frequency with which conduct has to occur in order to tell people and government officials who's a disorderly house and who's not? The Hubbard case out of Georgia, for example, says a disorderly house means we're not talking about casual occurrences, but the general customary habits of the house. The Harris case out of the D.C. Circuit, in the new construction that court added in order to avoid a vagueness challenge, said the government has to prove that this is a place that is regularly resorted to for these unlawful purposes.
Those were all criminal statutes?
Yeah, these were criminal statutes. I think that the Wisconsin statute just doesn't tell us whether a disorderly house can be a disorderly house if you've got 3 instances of misconduct over 3 years.
Mr. Olson, I understand your constitutional challenge here, but is this case about selective law enforcement?
It was at first, but we dropped that claim. Right.
Why then do we have in the facts the background if that claim is dropped?
To demonstrate that there can be a situation in which the vagueness of a statute matters, because if there were a motive to retaliate against an establishment...
No, I appreciate that, but that's not the focus that you want regarding the law, right? I'm not questioning the accuracy of what you represent, but I'm just wondering why if we're not having selective law enforcement, we're offering up these facts, that's all.
The reason is I just wanted to show the court the importance of, when we talk about one of the vices of a vague statute, is it creates the opportunity for discriminatory or vindictive enforcement. This is a situation in which that might have occurred. We're not pursuing that claim that it did occur, but we're certainly using that to show the court it's one of the dangers of vagueness. The district judge, Judge Connolly, seemed to say, the Squire case makes sense, and I would probably follow it, but for 3 things. Number one, this isn't a criminal statute. It's a civil enactment. Number two, this statute doesn't inhibit the exercise of constitutionally protected rights. And number three, we've got the Wisconsin Disorderly Conduct Statute that we can take the elements out of and give our disorderly house statute more precision. We've dealt with the seriousness of the sanction of revocation of a liquor license, and I hope the court is convinced that you need to have as precise a statute in this context as you do in low-level criminal prosecutions. On the other two reasons for distinguishing Squire, I just want to say that if you adopt the list that the court is urging on you from the Wisconsin Disorderly Conduct Statute, you wipe out its second justification for distinguishing Squire, because then you are in an area where some of these things in that list would have the potential to inhibit the exercise of constitutionally protected rights. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Thanks, Mr. Albert. Case taken under advisement.